Going to take a look at weather next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today. There's been some severe weather, certainly in the south and in the east, and we'll talk about that and what we can expect right here in good old Wisconsin with our guest, Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW. He's also a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. And you may have some questions about the weather. We can talk climate as well. And I hope you'll join in with those questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Steve, welcome back. Great to have you with us again.
It's great to be here on a leap year day.
That's right. Yeah. It is a leap year day.
It's a, yep. Do that every 4 years.
I totally forgot.
Yeah.
Well, I won't have to worry about it for 4 more years, so I guess we're okay.
That's right. Yeah, you can now skip it and not worry about it.
Doesn't have much impact on what's happening weather-wise, I don't think.
Yeah, not much, although it is interesting. I was talking to somebody yesterday. You know, so it's the 29th. It only occurs once every 4 years, but
yeah. They
keep records for the 29th.
So
you would expect that you'd be able to break those records easier because there's, you know, 25% fewer observations on that day. But our record high for today is like 60 degrees, and it's beautiful it is out there in southern Wisconsin. I don't think we're going to
I was kind of, you know, yesterday as an example, and I think across a lot of Wisconsin, it was really nice most of the day, and then kind of late in the day it got...
Yeah, we had a system come through and drop the temperature down. We had a record in Madison. I think Milwaukee was getting close, too. I don't know if they ever broke it for our record temperature.
Well, the East Coast was hit by tornadoes and damaging winds last week, kind of the south and east. How bad were they?
Yeah, they were, you know, I didn't get what they were categorized as in terms of EF4s, that scale. Some of the pictures that I saw would certainly put them in the EF3 type category where you're seeing wide-scale destruction. It's a reminder that spring is coming. It's not just the tulips that come up that tell us spring is coming, but when we start getting routine severe weather warnings, particularly in the southeast at this time of year.
Is it unusual for February?
It's for us, it's very unusual. It's the only month we haven't had a tornado in Wisconsin. But for the southeast, no. I mean, their peak is a little earlier in the spring. So this is, you know, a little early start, but certainly not out of the ordinary.
So we never had a tornado on February 29th.
We have never had a tornado on February 29th.
Okay. Oh, man. Bob in Eau Claire has a question for us, so let's go there. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I don't think we're going to have a tornado today either.
No, no. I don't think so.
We may have snow later, though. So.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, I split my time between Minnesota Public Radio and WPR, and this morning I heard the chief meteorologist at NPR say that Minnesota averaged about 4 to 5 degrees above normal for these past 3 meteorological months of winter. And I'm curious how Wisconsin has done in that same time frame.
Yeah, we were above normal as well for the winter. Last time, when I looked yesterday, just before going to bed, we were like, it was like 3 degrees, I'm pretty sure, for most of Wisconsin, above normal.
And you know, February is like Minnesota then.
Yeah, a little bit. Minnesota sounded like they were a little bit warmer, but you know, mm-hmm. 4 degrees above normal, 3 degrees, who's going to argue, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was
sure.
Above normal, which... You know, January for us was slightly above normal, and February for us was most of Wisconsin was 1 to 2 degrees above normal.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Vivian in Milwaukee, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Vivian.
Hello. You're going to hear a squeal.
Ah.
I walk around with my... handheld, but I want to be on a direct line to talk on the radio.
Okay.
Thank you. So good morning and happy leap day.
To you as well.
And I always appreciate your programs, Larry, and I'm interested especially in the weather, for example. And my question for your guest is about chemtrails. And the chemtrails, what I'm calling chemtrails, are the big, wide emissions from jets that go by, and they make X's and all sorts of different designs in the sky. It isn't the occasional high-flying jet plane that is going somewhere. Well, these mm-hmm. are going somewhere. But after many of these have passed, the sky gets cloudy. And then after a while, maybe they dissipate. But I am wondering, what are the effects of these days and chemtrails on the weather?
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Vivian. Thank you for calling. And, you know, we should talk about first maybe what are the chemtrails made up of?
Yeah, so they're really the ones that are coming out of jets, and those are the ones that we see up high, these linear features. They're called contrails. They're condensation trails. So they're mostly water. Mm-hmm. And there was a big NASA experiment in the mid-90s where we actually studied those and looked at the impact of different fuels and different airlines and things like that. They're really quite amazing. They occur when you need to have the right upper atmosphere conditions of it being cold and moist. And that's when you see a lot of them, particularly around airports, because that's where they're going by, and they crisscross because they're tracking the aircraft. Because they occur when it's warm and moist, a lot of times, well, not a lot of times, when the conditions are right, they will spread out, and they can go from these linear features to covering the complete area with thin cirrus clouds. That doesn't have much of an effect on the weather other than making the temperatures a little cooler because the sunlight gets scattered out. Climatologically, they actually lead to a slight warming of the atmosphere.
They do.
Yeah, they reflect solar energy back out to space, but they do a lot of trapping of that infrared radiation as well, and that tends to dominate.
So there we go.
So these... is there any concern over them or
what's
to climate if it's warming our planet?
Yeah, that's a good question. There is a lot of concern about them, particularly if they get into the stratosphere. So if they get up to like 11, 12 miles above the surface up by where we live, then if those contrails form, they'll stay around for a long time. And then that would have a bigger climate effect. So they are looking at ways in terms of how do you reduce the production of them. And the best way is to change the flight patterns.
It's
the easiest. Because it's like the mechanism for forming them is the same mechanism in wintertime when you breathe out and you see that smoke come out of your mouth because it's so cold. It's that same physical process. So you have warm air, moist air that's coming out of the jets. Mm. So if the conditions are right, you're going to form them. So probably the best thing to do is to get the jets out of there and fly them into an area where the clouds won't form.
So is that forming when even on days when it's colder, but we just don't see them?
Yeah, they won't be very long-lived. So they'll come out and dissipate really quickly.
Okay, yeah. Got it. Yeah. All right. Well, good questions, Vivian. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, our guest today as we talk with him about the weather, giving us a little update. When I want an update on the weather, especially in the morning when I'm on my way to work, I tune to our own weather person, Joy Cardine.
You hear me crying this morning, Larry, when I was talking about the snow that's on the way for southern Wisconsin.
She knows her stuff and when it comes to weather, and she knows her stuff when it comes to talking with you about our winter membership drive. It ends today, and Joy's with me to remind you that your gift, any amount, makes a big difference. So I hope you'll give now at WPR.org or by phoning 888 888- 202-2552.
And Larry, I have big news because right now we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect up to $4,000. This generous match is from an anonymous 9XM Leadership Circle member, and it means that he will match every dollar you give during this, the last day of the membership drive.
It's his way of encouraging you to join him in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. You can double your support for the programs you love. Give now at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
You might not have a life coach or a personal trainer or weather experts on speed dial, but that's okay because you have Larry. You have Wisconsin Public Radio. You get great advice from all sorts of different guest experts. And what is the cost to you? Well, you get to decide. How's that for a deal? The Ideas Network is your affordable source for helpful information. It's a great deal. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You do indeed decide the amount of your pledge. Every pledge matters. Every pledge helps pay for the programs you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio. And during this drive, you can ask for a set of useful WPR bandanas when you give $6 a month.
Useful is right and very attractive, too. They've got a traditional design with a WPR spin. You'll get one red one and one navy bandana. Show your support for WPR and then ask for your bandanas when you give $6 a month or a one-time gift of $72, and that will be doubled at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I think it's a great business model in that it operates using donations from people and donations from corporations. It works. I'm happy to donate because I think it's so important. And I'm happy to donate more because I know there's some people out there that can't. It's just great company in the house. I'm Mary from Menominee, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for everyday listening.
Well, Mary from Menominee, thank you so much for your contribution. If you haven't contributed yet, we're in the last day of the drive. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during our winter membership drive. Larry Mueller here with Joy Cardine asking for your support of WPR. And maybe your gift is $10 or $15 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
You know, I bet you have a monthly subscription for your cell phone or for Netflix or something like that. Now we are asking you to support WPR like you pay for other services that you rely on.
The difference here is that you decide how much your WPR listening is worth to you. I hope you'll support the programs that are part of your day. Become a WPR sustainer when you choose the monthly gift amount that works for you at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You listen to Wisconsin Public Radio every day. You know how important it is to you, and you want it to be here for future generations.
They should have access to the same quality news and information and music and entertainment that has nourished you. Your pledge of support today, it's a building block for a stable future.
So invest in quality radio for yourself and for the next generation coming up with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And as Joy mentioned, we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from an anonymous 9XM Leadership Circle member. So your gift of $50 turns into $100. Your $100 turns into $200. Your $1,000 turns into $2,000. So take advantage of this match and double your support for WPR programs when you give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Yeah, we have three people have taken advantage of that dollar-for-dollar match, but room for a lot more of you. Let's not leave a dollar on the table with this dollar-for-dollar match going on. You know, on Wisconsin Public Radio, you get programs that inform and inspire you, programs that entertain and engage you anytime you want.
And what makes it all possible? Well, you do, frankly. People who contribute make it happen.
At Wisconsin Public Radio, your membership makes a difference. Become a member with your pledge of, say, $5 a month or whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I talked to a friend who hadn't donated for a couple of years into donating, and maybe you donated a few years ago. Feel like you've done your part, but you enjoy listening to WPR year after year. Your continued support like my friends, is what keeps us going.
If it's been a while since you donated, we understand. This is a perfect time to give again at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. No scolding here. We'll be glad to have you back.
And with this weather show, this is the perfect storm we have here. It's the final day of our winter membership drive, and our dollar-for-dollar match still in effect. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR goes twice as far.
And in fact, if you're a procrastinator like a lot of us, this is the time to make that pledge right now. And I know that a number of you are realizing this is the very last day, your last opportunity during Larry's show to pledge your support to Wisconsin Public Radio. Chad and Julie did from Waukesha. Thank you, Chad and Julie. They say thank you to everyone at WPR for the great programming, and thanks for doubling our donation. So we shall do that. Or at least our anonymous 9XM Leadership Circle member will do that. We have that dollar-for-dollar match up to $4,000, and your pledge will be doubled. So take advantage of this opportunity at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Lots of great comments from people. What about you, though? They've commented because they pledged. And what about you? If you haven't pledged, right now is the time to do it. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Make your contribution. If you've already done so, thank you so much. If you haven't, do it right now. Now we're having lots of fun talking with Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW, professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences, one of our weather guys. Obviously, talking about the weather, we've started in talking about the severe weather season that's just getting started, or will be getting started pretty soon here in Wisconsin. You may have an experience to share. You may have a question about the weather or about climate. We'll certainly be glad to take that as well. Call in at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. I hear you have an interesting lecture, by the way, scheduled for this week.
Yeah, we have a guest, David Archer, coming from University of Chicago on Thursday. It's a public lecture, free to the public, and he's an expert in the carbon cycle. So he's going to be talking about carbon uses, how carbon gets into the atmosphere, how it gets taken out of the atmosphere. It's geared towards a general public audience. It's called the Roebuck Lecture. We had an alumni donate some money to our department, and this is what we do with it.
Excellent.
So it should be a really good presentation. He's
I
a
was
good
reading
speaker.
A little about it, and we're out of whack. The world, the globe itself is kind of out of whack when it comes to carbon.
Yeah, we've put it out of whack, because of the combustions of fossil fuel. I mean, we rely on that right now, and so that's changed the carbon amount in the atmosphere, and of course that has led to global warming. He'll be talking on Thursday. I forget the room off the top of my head now.
We'll have time to look for
we'll
it. Lynn on Facebook says she remembers a white tornado hitting her area and asks how common they are. And I'm not sure what she means by a white tornado. Do you know that term?
No.
Maybe a tornado that just looked white?
That's what I would think. And there's a couple of ways you could get it to look white. One is picking up water, and so getting mm-hmm. a bunch of water drops, and then it would be like a cloud sort of looking at white when the light reflected off of it. Or if it picked up a bunch of tiny dust, I could also see it looking white. You know, if it didn't pick up too much dirt, if it picks up too much debris, then it's going to take on that really dark brown, umber, black kind of color.
Which is
more typical of the violent looking ones, right? Yeah.
Have you personally experienced a tornado?
No, thankfully, I have not. I have seen a waterspout, and actually that looked white. So again, I might think of if a tornado or went over water, it might take on that white appearance.
Yeah. Yeah, that, yeah. That.
And it, I mean, a water spout, which is far less dangerous than a tornado, was scary. I mean, I was down in Florida and driving with a colleague, and we saw it, and we pulled off the side of the road. So it was probably a couple of hundred yards away from us, and man, it just, you know, you just see this column, and you just know that. But it's a lot of vertical motion, keeping all that stuff lined up.
Hey, I'm not wanting to be in my kayak out in the water.
Yeah,
one of those
you don't
want
to, right. And when tornado season comes around, and, you know, people, experts as well as non-experts shouldn't do this, go out looking for tornadoes.
No.
I don't do that. I just like to go to my basement.
We did have one. I did have the chance to experience one many, many years ago in my younger days when I lived in a mobile home.
Oh, hey, you don't want to experience a tornado in a mobile home.
I actually ran next door to the neighbor's the neighbor house, and when we came up from the basement, our mobile home was tipped on its side, not completely tipped. The tornado didn't quite go right over the but I can tell you that the jam and the milk and everything that was in the refrigerator was now kind of on the side of the... Oh, my word, what a mess.
Yeah, it's tornadoes and mobile homes generally don't match very well.
No, I saw there were some awful, terrible pictures, photos on
the
news.
In the southeast, yeah.
Yeah, in the southeast. It was just terrible.
Yeah.
Bill in Madison would like to know the difference between El Nino and La Nina and how they affect our weather so far inland.
Oh, boy, that's a good question. Both the El Nino and the La Nina are events that occur in the Pacific Ocean. In the normal conditions, what we have is warm water in the western part of the Pacific, so over by Indonesia and those maritime continents. Yeah. In El Nino, what happens is the atmosphere winds weaken that are pushing that water to the west, and so all that warm water shifts eastward and comes onto the coastal region of South America. And with that comes a bunch of precipitation, a lot of convection. And that convection changes the patterns in the mid-latitude regions. So there's a teleconnection, we call it, between what happens in the tropics and those circulations mm-hmm. and in the mid-latitudes where we live. Those changes in El Nino typically result in us in warmer winters and less snowfall. And that's consistent with what we're having this year
Sure.
La Nina is the opposite of that. So instead of the waters off of the tropical waters off of South America warming, they all get colder than normal. And that also leads to a shift in the jet stream in the mid-latitude regions. In terms of its impact on us in Wisconsin, the La Nina doesn't have as statistically significant as an impact as El Nino. So we usually really trek El Nino because it impacts our winter time precipitation, snowfall in northern Wisconsin, and that, you know, is a big economic driver for the region.
Oh yeah, for sure. So is El Nino have a bigger impact in, say, South America, or?
So not in terms of weather. In terms of, you might imagine, fishing.
Yeah.
And that's what El Nino means, Kleistchild, because usually when it would happen, it happens not on a regular basis, but on the order of every 7 years, plus or minus some variability. Mm-hmm. And usually the warm water really will hit around Christmas time. And that really impacts the fishing down there. And then the whole ecosystem until that warm water leaves again and it gets back to normal.
Okay, so it makes it worse or better?
It makes it worse.
Makes a lot better.
Yeah,
make it a lot worse.
Yeah, because the anchovies aren't there anymore. And so the whole food chain gets disrupted.
We have some callers online. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's turn to Maureen in Appleton next. Maureen, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Finally, maybe I shall get my question answered. When the lady questioned a white tornado, we've seen films many, many times of tornadoes coming down from the clouds. And very often, they are white. Now, it was always my assumption and my understanding they were white until they picked up residue or you know, stuff in the earth.
Debris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, debris. Okay, Is that probably what she's speaking of?
Excellent point, and I'll bet that's what it is. And so when we have that that cone come down from the cloud,
right.
Meteorologists, we don't call that a tornado.
Oh.
We call that a funnel cloud. But you're right. That I mean, if that touches the ground, then it technically becomes a tornado.
Yep.
So you're exactly right. I bet I'm thinking tornado, and what she might have seen was a funnel cloud that is often the marking of a tornado potentially developing. And
right.
Those are white because it is composed of liquid water droplets.
Absolutely.
Now, can I have one other question answered?
Sure.
After correcting me, you bet. You're going to have two more questions.
I won't do that to you. Up here by Lake Michigan, and I'm in Outagamie County, but we get this, what I always call backwards snow, for lack of a better word. We get it off of Lake Michigan, and it can come as far as Appleton and even go a little bit further west. Why do we get that freaky snow?
So it comes from the east?
It comes from the east.
Yeah.
Right. And it can be substantial.
Yeah, yep. And it comes because of the circulation pattern, like if a low is to the south of you, like going over Chicago, then you get those easterly winds that are coming across the lake and picking up and evaporating moisture off of Lake Michigan. And then it hits the land, and if there's any kind of upward motion, precipitation forms.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call. I may have mentioned this on the show before, but I once on the show, I was talking with somebody, climate person, who said if they'd built the Pennsylvania Turnpike about 2 miles further south, they would have eliminated so many problems.
Actually, I remember reading that too. Yeah, yeah.
With the terrible snows and everything that
right, yeah.
Come that lake effect snow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you drive by the Great Lakes on I-90 or I-90 in particular, boy, you. Yeah, I know. We lived in Colorado, and we did that drive many times back to New York. And as you go by Lake Erie, boy, it's
bad.
It's bad. It's bad.
Peggy on Facebook wondered if power plant exhaust or smoke contributes to cloud cover.
It can, because if there's aerosols that come out of, so particularly before we really started with the EPA and the Clean Air Act, there'd be aerosols, particles that would come out of those towers, and they could lead to condensation. The other thing that's happened that I've seen on satellite imageries is that you could have a cloud deck out there of composed of liquid water, but they're super cooled, which means they're below freezing, but they're still liquid.
Oh.
And then out of the tower comes, again, what we call ice nuclei, so an aerosol, a pollution particle, that can convert that liquid into ice particles. And when that happens, that cloud just precipitates out.
Ah, yeah. Really cool. Steve Ackerman, our guest, having some fun talking climate and weather with him here on the Ideas Network. You can join in, 1-800-642-1234, and Joy Cardine back again.
I am back, Larry. I am back, and I'm back with good news that we have 20 pledges in toward our 40 pledge goal, so halfway there. And that dollar for dollar match is being slowly but surely taken up, but still some money on the table to double your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Take advantage of this dollar for dollar match and double the impact of your pledge right now.
You have been enjoying the weather conversation today with Steve Ackerman, I'm very sure. And I think this is a good example of the kinds of important and informative conversations we have.
It is, certainly. I love your weather guys, Larry. I love all of your guest experts. I learn something new every day on your show. Now, I hope you are like me and you will take a few minutes to make this program and many more programs possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do. With a few minutes of your time, all we need is your name, contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay.
and your gift will support the programs that keep you connected to the world. Larry, I've got to share this. I'm laughing because I see this comment from Joseph from Oak Creek who says, Larry is the boss hog. I love his optimism. I love listening to his helpful tips for everyday activities and whatnot. I mean, that give now to support Larry's optimism and all the guest experts who have helpful tips for everyday life. That's what this show is all about. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A large slice of our budget pie, the biggest slice, is really listener-supported. So while all of our funding sources, certainly the state and federal government and businesses, are really very important, your contribution makes a huge difference. WPR is the amazing service that it is thanks to your support, to listener support. So I hope you'll give right now at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
For me, it's really a sense of a connection to the world and the world of ideas. It keeps me informed. It keeps me thinking. I can't remember the number of times that I've had conversations with people saying, oh, I heard something this morning on Wisconsin Public Radio or National Public Radio. And then it's a way of having a very interesting discussion with other people about some of those ideas. And so I think that it keeps me informed and it keeps me thinking and is a way of engaging other people in important ideas. This is David Corey from Green Bay, Wisconsin, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for information in the arts, culture, politics, and the world.
I hope you'll make your contribution in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Joy Cardine, asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio during this last day of the winter membership drive. And maybe your pledge is $5 a month. Maybe it's $100 a month. We appreciate and we count on your gift.
And remember that. And any pledge is still doubled with that dollar-for-dollar match still on the table. Not many radio stations have the mission to inform, inspire, and engage listeners. But we do. These are the values that are core of Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's not something we do for you. It's really something you do for yourself and for your community, because listener support is what makes it all possible. So please contribute now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Terry from Crivets increased his sustaining support this weekend. And then he said he pledged again because he wanted to take advantage of the dollar-for-dollar match that's in effect right now from an anonymous 9XM Leadership Circle member. So your gift of $50 turns into $100. Whatever it is doubled. Take advantage of this match and double your support for WPR programs when you give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Joy, we already have 13 new folks.
Excellent.
This hour. If you've never given before, here's what to expect. Short process, just takes a couple of minutes. You answer some basic questions, name, address, amount of gift, and how you'd like to pay.
And that's all there is to it.
That's it.
You make that first donation to WPR, and you'll feel really good about it. You really will. Many first-time donors give $5 a month, but the amount is totally up to you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you're saying to yourself, oh, I'll pledge next time
There's
around.
No, next time.
No. This is it. Today is your last chance to pledge during this show. I hope you'll pledge during our membership drive.
Don't delay. Join the community of people who come together to make great radio possible. It's not possible without pledges from listeners like you. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And today, the final day of our drive, your dollar-for-dollar match is still in effect, so please give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And your support of WPR goes twice as far.
And remember, you can also ask for your bandanas, your WPR bandanas, with your pledge of $6 a month. That's a one-time gift of $72, and it will be doubled at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Here's the boss hog talking right now. I'm telling you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much if you've already given. If you haven't, Now, believe me, now is the time to do it. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. And thanks so much for your contributions. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at weather and climate, as we pretty much always do the last Monday of the month. Our guest today, Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison, professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. If you have a question or maybe an experience you want to talk about, I hope you'll do it. Call in 1-800-642-1234. You can also post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, or, of course, email us at talk@WPR.org. Want to hear from you. So please give us a call. Mitch in Green Bay, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hello. I'm interested in rainbows. I've noticed that even on partial rainbows, it seems to be an area, like, behind them that doesn't have any light or anything on it. It seems to sort of be just nothing back there. A little bit further, you'll see the clouds or you'll see the sky or whatever.
Yep.
But it's always that little portion, that little area behind it that doesn't seem to have any light. What is that? Why is that?
So do you mean right directly behind the rainbow or in the area around the rainbow?
Or behind and around.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like if the light is coming over my shoulder, then it's back of the rainbow. But if the light is coming from the side, then it's down light from the rainbow.
Okay.
So this is what I'm thinking that you observed, which is a really good observation that not many people make.
I have never seen anything.
Yeah,
like that.
And there's still some. Well, the. I think the easiest way for people to pick it out is when you have a double rainbow. If you look at a double rainbow, the blue sky between that area is darker than the blue sky that's everywhere else.
Oh.
And the reason why that's the case, and it's hard to describe without drawing diagrams, is that to make up the intense light of the rainbow, that light that's making up the rainbow is coming from that darker blue region.
Oh.
So if the rainbows weren't there, there would be more light coming out of that area. But it's being bent, refracted, and forming the light in the rainbow.
Which makes that
band darker. Yeah,
yeah,
that part
of
the sky.
Yeah, it makes it look like it's a shadow.
Yes, exactly.
Of the rainbow.
Yep, yep.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a really good observation. Not a lot of people actually observe that. But if you look for it, it becomes pretty distinct, particularly in the double rainbow. That's the easiest way to observe it.
Mitch, thanks.
I've noticed the bigger and partial rainbows.
Oh, really? Okay, I haven't looked much at partial. I'll look for it in partial rainbows. I haven't looked much at, look for that in partial rainbows. But I'll have to take a look.
Mitch, you realize how many people, myself included, are now going to be paying a lot more closer attention?
Right.
Thank you so much.
There's a lot going on with rainbows.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, appreciate the call. That was great. I'll be watching now, for sure. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Another caller who couldn't hang on wonders if there's any way to tell when the ice on the Greenland ice sheet will melt enough to expose the World War II airplanes that are buried there. Wow.
Oh.
I don't know that story.
I don't know that either. Were they...
I wish they could
have
landed.
Yeah, right. So did they land there and then leave them there and then they get covered with snowfall?
That is
because if that's the case, then I would think that it wouldn't be that long, because that was only what 70 years ago. That
40s, probably early 40s.
Right. So,
I wish that caller. I hope that caller calls back because I want the backstory.
We
want to know. So call back or shoot us an email or something.
Because it'd have to be near the coastline. Because it doesn't. I wouldn't think that it would precipitate on the top of the summit of Greenland. Enough to bury an aircraft even in 70 years. They don't get that much snowfall. It's just that the glacier is so thick because it's been precipitating for so many years up there.
Yeah, it's Yeah, it's really not that long ago, to be perfectly honest.
No, right, yeah, 70 years. It's not...
not that far back.
Two climate periods, two 30-year periods.
Oh, is that what they call a climate period?
Well, that's what I think of a climate period. It's a 30-year average.
Oh,
so okay. When you're doing the normal temperatures or the average temperatures for today, you're looking at a 30-year mean.
There we go.
Yeah.
Marianne in Taylor's Falls, Minnesota, up next with a good question, I think. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, I'm curious about the weather cycles or the cycle of the seasons and how it affects radio reception. When I lived in Minneapolis, I noticed that even with Minnesota Public Radio. Now I live on the Minnesota-Wisconsin border and listen to Wisconsin Public Radio and Minnesota, but I have more trouble receiving the signal from Wisconsin Public Radio in the summertime. And someone once told me that had something to do with the weather, but I haven't been able to hear any detail on that.
So, yeah, I would think not so much the weather down low.
Yeah, weather, the cycle of the sun or something.
Yeah, so the cycle of the sun, one thing it'll do is change the upper atmosphere. And radio waves will often propagate in the upper atmosphere. And so I can see that causing a change. That would be a function of season, because in the summertime, there's more solar radiation, more heating, causing a warmer, which would expand the upper atmosphere. And therefore that might change it.
Okay.
That's the only thing I could imagine that would do it. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe one of our...
But that also seems to affect AM radios more than FM radios.
Yeah. And I never listened to AM, so...
So it may not be that. So I don't
notice that, but then I was surprised that it did with, you know, that FM.
Right, yeah. I would be surprised at that, too.
Well, maybe Al or Steve or one of our engineers happens to be listening right now and can
give us an answer
phone in.
Maybe they turn the power down or something.
they can phone in with the, help us out here a little bit. Thanks a lot, Marianne. That's an interesting question. Tom in Cedarburg has some information on those World War II planes, I'll bet. Okay. Hi, Tom.
Hi, I'd been up at the EAA air show a few years ago, and they'd gotten one of those planes out. It was there was a large bomber, a B-17, that was escorted by, I think, four or six P-38 Lightnings, and they were following the B-17, and it got lost. So they all landed in the wrong spot. They landed within a couple hundred yards of each other on this ice sheet back in, I think, 42 or 43. And I think a submarine came and got them, like a week or so later. The pilot, so they did survive, but the airplanes, from sitting on that, I guess the snow and stuff like that had to pack on top of them and, you know, turned to ice in that time frame. And I think it was maybe 8 or 10 years ago that they started work to get one of them out, and they had to literally take it all piece by piece. They had to drill down through the ice and then go down and, you know, take it apart.
So I guess, so do you know if they landed on the summit or on the coastline?
I would guess part of the coastline, because it was a pretty flat area, and the planes are not wrecked. You know, they're actually able to land them on them.
Yeah, and I guess if they landed on a glacier, I guess one thing I didn't think of, I was thinking of accumulation from the snowfall burying them. But just them being there, warming up, you know, when the sun is out, it'll heat that metal up, and that'll cause them to sink into the snowfall as well. A lot of times you see that when there are, like, leaves out on the lake, or on an ice sheet, the leaves will be in the, you know, will be down
sunk
in the ice because they're warming up the ice and melting it and then sinking.
So it's a combination of the two.
It'd probably be a combination of the two. So I guess I could see how it could get buried in 70 years.
These are way down, like 60, 80 feet. They're way down.
Wow. That is further
than
I would have guessed.
That really is something.
Yeah.
I've got to go online and read some more.
That up.
Read some more about that.
That's fascinating.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, okay.
I appreciate the call very much. World War II planes, all righty.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Sandy in New Berlin up next. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. Well, I have a little rainbow story that I was reminded of when I was listening to the previous caller. When I was in college many years ago, it was summertime, and I was having dinner in an area where there's a giant window looking out over a parking lot. And all of a sudden, it seemed like a rainbow was ending in the parking lot. So I ran out. Yes, I ran out to stand in the end of this rainbow, no pot of gold, but must have been on the other end. But it was an experience so exciting because I would have thought the rainbow would have been perpendicular to the ground. That's how we see it. But it was like being under a tent of color.
Oh.
It seemed to be, I'm going to say, about 10 feet wide, and it went over me like a ribbon.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. So I'm just wondering if that is what a rainbow is all about, and maybe the colors were perpendicular to, you know, when we see it from a distance. But it was just such an incredible experience. I thought
I have
to get a scientific validation that this actually did
happen. Yeah, we always think of it as being very narrow. I mean, kind of that's always what's in my head.
Yeah, but, you know, mm-hmm. I hope I don't burst your dream here. But it probably wasn't a rainbow formed by raindrops. It could have been a rainbow.
It was a sunny day.
Yeah, it could have been a rainbow passing through some glass or lead glass. You know how sometimes if you put those lead crystals up? Because the way that the rainbow forms with raindrops, you have to be in a certain relationship to the raindrops in the sun so that you can't actually be in it. But, you know, having said that, I know that we hang these, you know, crystals in our windows. And when they throw rainbows out, you know, we only have small ones, so we get these small rainbows. Technically, they're not rainbows, but we all call them rainbows because we know what they mean. But I love to go stand against the wall where they're hitting and line your eye up to see the colors because the colors are so intense and pure. It's just fascinating.
Oh.
So I can imagine what you saw and being surrounded by it, by something big like that, must have been an absolute thrill.
Oh, it must have been.
It was. It was very thrilling. So thank you very much, though, for the scientific spin. And I will still consider myself having been at the end.
I would definitely still do that, too. Just say the scientists don't know anything.
He didn't know what he was talking about.
He wasn't there.
He wasn't there. I was. Yes. And I'm sticking by it.
Right.
And I'm sticking by my support of Joy Cardine as well, who does an amazing job in the morning. And the mornings here on Wisconsin Public Radio. And here she is back here.
With
some good news.
Very good news. Thank you. You helped us reach our goal, and we have used every last penny of that $4,000 dollar-for-dollar match. So that is really good news. But even better news, you still have an opportunity to support Larry's show right now during this last day of our winter membership drive. Every single pledge matters at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's always so much fun to have regulars like Steve Ackerman, John Martin. John's going to be joining us after noon for a few minutes as well. And then we've got Sandy Sawchuk, helps us with our pets. Scott Craven always talks about wildlife sightings. It's really wonderful to have these folks on.
Yeah, you have great guests that cover such important topics, topics that are near and dear to your heart. You hear advice and ideas, and you have come to trust and appreciate Larry's guests, and you support this program with your listening and with your dollars. So it's easy to do. Just go to WPR.org and or call 888-202-2552.
And during this membership drive, you can get a set of two WPR bandanas when you give $6 a month or a one-time gift of $72. Your donation supports the programs you count on, and you can also get these fun bandanas or T-shirts as well.
Yeah, we've got T-shirts and bandanas. I like the bandanas. I think they're kind of cool. You get one red one, one blue one. You can tie them on your pet. I'm going to tie one on Ray, my cat, and take them outside and enjoy our wonderful Wisconsin weather out and about in nature with our bandanas and showing our support for WPR. So check out the design at WPR.org and then ask for yours when you pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I prefer more balanced conversation. That's what took me to WPR. When I got there, I found a whole host of programming that interests me. Gardening shows, home improvement shows, humor shows, word language shows, things that just grab my interest and grab my attention. It's not just one thing. We had been giving on an annual basis for years. I didn't want this to be an annual decision, and I think that's where we decided to make the change and become sustaining members. It was a statement of values as much as a statement of financial commitment. I'm Bruce from Brookfield, Wisconsin. I enjoy being a WPR sustainer, and I think you will too.
You know what? I agree with Bruce. I think you're going to have a lot of fun if you're a sustaining member, but regardless, so however you do it, I hope you'll pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Joy Cardine asking for your support of WPR during our winter membership drive. And maybe your gift is $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
Because you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio every day, it's safe to say that WPR is a fundamental part of your life. It's probably the soundtrack of your day. Your day is better because of this soundtrack, and with programs like Larry Mueller's, you count on the information and interesting ideas or things that make you laugh. So support this daily dose of WPR with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have, during this drive, we've actually had contributions of $5 all the way up to multiple thousands of dollars. I hope you'll consider joining the 9XM Leadership Circle with a gift of $100 or even $200 a month for the programming essential to your life. Make that leadership gift right now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. We would love to hear from you.
And thanks to Marjorie from Cumberland, who pledged, who said, I enjoy listening to so many programs on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's like having a friend with me when I'm home alone or when I'm traveling by myself in the car. That's right. Larry Mueller is your companion, and his guests are your ongoing, continuing education. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we'll be back with our weather guys in just a couple of minutes. Please pledge right now. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk weather and climate. Now with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman with us the first hour, John Martin joining us for the home stretch here. John, you're teaching your class, right?
I was. I just got out of lecture just now, yep.
Yeah, John's a professor, a former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Steve, also a member of that department, and he also directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. Call in. Questions or comments, 800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And, John, you do a seasonal analysis. You call it the cold pool analysis?
Yeah. I look at the aerial extent of the minus 5 degrees Celsius, is 23 Fahrenheit, air a mile above the ground. And we can do this because we have four times daily analyses of northern hemispheric upper air observations. And so I look at that from December 1st all the way through to 28th of February. And I've been doing that for data that goes back to 1948-49. And this winter was the seventh warmest winter in the 68 years of data that I have.
Wow.
So in the last two winters were consecutive record-breaking warmest winters. So this one was a bit of a relapse into something more mundane. But mundane means
it's still in the
top 11%. So it's pretty remarkable. Yeah. Wow.
So the trend is that way.
The trend is absolutely that way. Yeah, it's robustly that way. The winter is getting, by this measure, and you can use different threshold temperatures too at the same lower tropospheric level, it's shrinking. The cold pool is not as big now as it was in 1950, and there's no turning back.
Do you ever track like a city like Madison, how often or what years we're in the cold pool versus not within that?
No, regional stuff would be the next step to really understand that because, in fact, motivated by last two winters. When we were,
two winters ago,
desperately cold here in North America, and yet it was at the time the warmest year of all time by that measure.
Right.
So how do you rectify regional cold with hemispheric warmth?
Yeah.
And it's a really good question. Got to figure that out.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Tom from Madison saw an article about a new device called Underwave for predicting weather. Do you guys know anything? Underwave? I don't know that.
No. Maybe it's a website or something that has weather data on it or something. I don't know about this device.
Maybe Tom can shoot a note back and give us more information on it.
The word is familiar now, so I forget where I read it.
Think about it. In the meantime, we had a caller earlier, and we had a little discussion about the Greenland ice sheet and the World War II planes that were buried in the Greenland ice sheet, and we talked a little bit about it, and another caller called in with a little backstory because Steve or I didn't know anything about it. And then another caller has called in to suggest that if you want to learn some more about it, you can Google Glacier Girl to find out more about the World War II planes.
Glacier Girl.
Glacier Girl. Frankly, I'm going to write that down because I want to go back and look at it. It's really very interesting.
Yeah,
is that something, John, did you know anything about it?
I know that the Allies were very interested in extending as far west as they could their observational network during the war because the Germans couldn't get that far out, and they were desperately trying but couldn't make it. So that might have been what caused some of those planes to have to go down, foul weather in the vicinity of Greenland when they were out on actual meteorological reconnaissance missions. That's my guess. It's probably not half wrong.
Yeah, it's like apparently they landed and were rescued later. So very interesting.
Yeah,
Dave in Madison has a question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Dave. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you, and to your guests, thanks for coming on the show. This is a great example of the Wisconsin idea at work here. I'm wondering about tapping maple trees, and what we need is weather where during the day it's going to get well into the above freezing range, but at night it dips below freezing. And it's got to be like that for a long stretch without any expected real dips in cold that could stop the trees from running and slow up the taps, and you have to re-drill. Any suggestions looking at what the weather is going to be like for the next few weeks? Seems early to start, but the weather's been so nice.
It seems early to start, but boy, now's this time to start looking, because I know that we have a friend that taps way up north, and he keeps inviting us. We miss it because something happens in the weekend, and then it's like we'll go next weekend, and then it's over. These are the kind of days in southern Wisconsin that you want. We're in the 40s right now, and it's nice and sunny, and it's going to be cold tonight.
It's going to be cold the rest of this week.
That's not good.
Yeah, this week's out, but Steve's exactly right. This is the time of year where you can start to count on 4 or 5 days in a row where the temperature gets to 43 during the day and it's 29 at night.
That's just what you want.
Yeah, it's just what you want. So I guess I would start to pay strict attention to the high and low forecasts over the next, not this week. This week's out. Forget about spending any energy this week. It's going to be snowy and cold a couple of times. And I mean all the way through about next Monday. So we'll have to be, we'll be on alert for that for most of the days between now and a week from now. But after that, it's definitely ripening into the kind of conditions you want.
Mm-hmm. So you asked the right question. You asked it when John was here. The season will probably be over the next time we're on the radio show.
It will be, that's for sure. In early April, it's over. Late March, early April, it's over. Yep.
And it really is a lot of fun to observe and to see in action. I can tell you that for sure.
Yeah.
I have a friend who's in northern Wisconsin who has several hundreds of trees that they tap. And so he's got quite the system. And it's really a lot of fun to watch them all in action. He's got it really mechanized. But he goes by the number. I said, what do you consider a good year? And he usually says, maybe 20 cases of beer. They have so many helpers. They have so many helpers that he has to supply beer for the helpers. And of course, the more maple syrup, the more beer
go. Right, yeah, because you got to watch it boil.
You should make some maple beer. That might be
maple beer.
There you go. Dave, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call very much. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Well, what kinds of weather can we expect in March? I mean, we can still certainly get some significant snow.
That is certainly true. Yeah. The old adage, in like a lion, out like a lamb, is not said vacantly. I think it's very commonly the case. It's going to be the case, at least the in like a lion pot's going to be the case for us this month. Snowing tonight and tomorrow, and then maybe again on the weekend. And then we don't have to go that far back. What was it, 4 years ago, March 2012, we had 5 days above 80 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, right, yeah.
And prior to that, in 3,000 March days, 100 years of records, we'd had five other days above 80. So it can be all over the map, literally, from crippling snow to 80 degrees.
Have you looked enough to try and figure out how much snow you think we're going to get from this storm? Again, it looks like a real tight gradient again.
Yeah, very tight. A little bit heavier to our south, you know, closer to the border, but... And then I'm figuring in an inch of it will melt because the ground's so warm. So I'm thinking about three and a half or so.
I have a 6 a.m. flight, so you think I'm going to get out? Yeah,
yeah, I think you will. I think it's going to be easy to move this around. I don't think it's going to... Sorry.
To get
I don't think it's going to be the kind of snow that really cripples us.
No, yeah. That's...
Timing is in favor of crippling because it starts at midnight and ends at 9 a.m. So it's going to be a rush hour, contention.
Right, yeah.
It's not going to be mid-afternoon. It will be a mess, but it might only be a mess is my guess right now.
Jennifer from Minocqua wondered about draining aquifers and how that can affect weather or if that can affect weather. Mm. We've got some aquifers that are...
You know, I think, you know, so you're draining the aquifers, you're putting it back into the hydrological cycle, out of the storage part for consumption and then recycling, I would guess.
But
the total amount... In terms of comparison to the total amount of water in the atmosphere, probably isn't that much.
Yeah, it's not. And plus, it gets recycled so quickly.
Yeah,
it'll find its way back into the ground and maybe even be sequestered. Like
maybe not
aquifer.
Back into the aquifer, but
it'll be out of the atmosphere in 9 days. So you can almost, without limit, it seems, put water vapor into the atmosphere and it'll figure out a way to get itself back into the ground and maybe even find its way into aquifers again. You know, fossilized water is pretty easy to return to fossilized status. That's what they say. I'm not an expert, but that's what I've heard because I had the same question once.
We have somebody else was wondering how climate change is going to affect our typical seasons. Can you look ahead 10 years, 5-10 years down the road to just...
So we'll still have winters.
Yeah.
It'll be shorter, the time span.
Mm-hmm.
The ice fishing will be shorter.
That's for sure.
Maple season... will probably also be shorter.
And earlier, perhaps.
And earlier.
Yeah.
And I'm hesitant there because I'm not sure. Well, not within 10 years, but, you know, within 50, 60 years, we won't have the best environment necessarily for maple trees.
Mm. Right.
They may want to be further north, right? Because they also want certain temperature conditions. Trees, they grow up and they
that's
get used to a certain temperature. So yeah, I think warm summer is warmer, longer, hotter.
Yeah. I mean, the notion that we just talked about it with respect to the cold pool, of all things.
Yeah.
You know, two winters ago, it was a warm hemispheric winter, one of the warmest of all time, and yet freezing cold here in the region over the central part of North America. So, as Steve points out, there's no way we're not going to have winter. There's cosmological ingredients that put us that way every single year. But I'll bet you the winter gets shorter, and I'll bet you we see some systematic changes in the circulation that maybe fluctuate from year to year. We may have... every fifth year, we'll have one of those cold winters, and then four out of the remaining four, we have a couple of mild ones like this one. So that's maybe the kind of trend we might start to see.
I've had folks on the show who during a sort of an odd period of time would say, you know, it feels like the governor moved Missouri up here to Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
And is that, is that kind of what we can expect down there? Missouri weather?
You know, there are analysis when they look at 50 to 100 years out. That's what they look for. I mean, within 30 years, we'll have the weather of southern Illinois, which is not a place that I want.
It's different. It's different, isn't it? And they're closer to the moisture source. One of the things that might not come along
that's true.
Is the thunderstorms. It might just get warmer here.
Yeah.
With not that much more increase in the rain. I don't know if that's one of the conclusions, but it strikes me that if you're going to have thunderstorms in the summertime, they're still going to occur more frequently and more viciously closer to the Gulf of Mexico than they are
really
up here.
Point.
You know,
so we got to have heat with not
perhaps
without more.
That's what I'm
water,
thinking.
Water, which would not be
dries out Iowa, dries out Minnesota. There's a lot of grains growing there. Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah,
it's not good.
Tom in Madison is called back to give some more information on the Underwave device. It's a startup company in Madison, and the device is I can't tell if it's 2 feet tall or 2 inches tall. It's it's small anyway. It's no more than 2 feet. 2 feet, okay, 2 feet tall, and can predict weather at a low level.
Hmm.
That's why I saw it. Yeah, it was a company coming back to Madison, a weather instrument company. Mm. Right. Yeah. So, I'm not sure about predicting.
Yeah, predicting probably the wrong. Go back and look Jaren, at it, but. Yeah.
So maybe telling us what's happening this day?
Yeah, monitoring it for sure is a factor, right. I suppose. And then maybe from, you can extrapolate perhaps from high resolution observations in the boundary layer or something. Maybe just it's good for agriculture or something like that.
Well, I saw it and I read that the company was coming back to Madison and I thought, wow, that's great. And then I stopped reading. Yeah. Maybe I should have read some more.
Learn more later.
Learn more later. And then it comes up on the radio show.
And the weather's going to be the next month is we have no idea, I suppose.
We got a week of it. So.
Got a week of cold.
Yeah, we got a week of cold coming, and from there.
I was, it was so nice this weekend. I went out and was moving some leaves around and noticed my tulips are coming up already.
Wow. Yeah.
So that was kind of a shock because I was there with a metal rake. I was like, oh, better stop.
Oh, man. Well, I tell you what, it's always fun when we talk weather with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. They're both professors in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. Steve directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. John's the past chair of the department. Always great to have them along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And I always look forward to Joy Cardine joining me, as you do about once
every pledge drive, usually once a pledge drive, Larry. But, you know, Larry, we have a goal of in the next 10 minutes, we have to get 20 pledges. So 2 pledges a minute, can we do it? I think we can do it.
I think we can do it as well. All we have to do is convince you as you listen in here to join in with a contribution. Your gift of $5 or $10 or $15 a month makes WPR the reliable station that it is with programs that you enjoy every day. So please give now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
You have been enjoying the conversation today with the weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. You're getting all sorts of great information about science and climate and weather. This is an example of the interesting and substantial conversations that we have on this show every day.
We hope you'll support the station you love and help us meet our goal when you give now at WPR.org. Only takes a few minutes to make this program and the many other programs possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you and then make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You give to WPR to support the programs that you love, and we do have something special during this winter membership drive, during this last day, these last 10 minutes on Larry's show of the winter membership drive. Ask for your set of two WPR bandanas when you give $6 a month or a one-time gift of $72.
You'll get a red one and you'll get a navy bandana. That's blue, I guess, is more like it. You've got a traditional paisley design on it with a WPR touch. Ask for your WPR bandanas now and show your support for WPR when you make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I'm John Nevins from Janesville, Wisconsin, and today I'd like to just share a little bit about why public radio means something to me. As a young boy, I listened to the radio quite a bit because we didn't have television. And I remember laying many times on a Saturday morning in front of the radio and listening to the programming and imagining that I was with the Lone Ranger or with whoever it was that was on the radio. And my parents forbid me to listen to the Green Hornet, but we used to sneak off and do it anyway.
He hunts the biggest of all game, public enemies who try to destroy our America.
Today I don't have to sneak off at all. I listen to it daily in the kitchen as I fix breakfast in the morning and at noon when I'm fixing dinner. It's a very special part of my life, and I am very, very proud to be a member of WPR and to be here today to share that thanks with the organization.
Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during this winter membership drive. Larry Mueller here with Joy Cardine, and we're asking for your support of WPR. And your gift. Maybe it's 10 or 15 bucks a month. Whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
You know, and maybe it's $100 a month. Giving to WPR is easy. It just takes a few minutes to make your contribution, and you will get so much back. You might consider, like some have already this hour, consider a 9XM leadership gift of $100 a month or more.
That comes to less than $4 a day, and it makes the talk, the news, the music, and the entertainment that you count on from WPR possible. Give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Families often tell us how WPR brings them closer together. Children and parents listen together before school and on the weekends, using WPR as a jumping-off point for conversations. Spouses get together at the end of the day and talk about the stories that they heard or the information they got on Larry's show.
Listening to WPR can be a point of connection between you and your loved ones. Your support right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 keeps that connection going.
We far exceeded the goal in your first hour of the Larry Mueller Show, Larry. Now, though, this last half an hour, we are looking for 20 pledges before 12:30. So still looking for 20 pledges on this last day, the last 5 minutes of the Winter Pledge Drive for Larry Mueller Show. Make your gift to support this program and all of the programs that you enjoy and rely on every day at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On WPR, you get unbiased news, you get high-quality entertainment, informative talk, great music. You get a rich experience no matter when you tune in.
The depth and breadth is possible thanks to listener contributions from you. Make yours now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And the beauty of making a voluntary donation is that you decide how much to give, because how much you give isn't as important as the fact that you do give.
Since contributing is your choice, and because WPR is something you value, you'll probably find that donating feels very good. Find out right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And Larry, I don't remember if you remember when you made your first pledge, but there was a difference from just being a listener to being a contributor. You feel a certain pride and ownership of and helping fund a service that you know is valuable to everybody. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That was a long time ago, but I think my first one was $60.
Yeah,
and I wrote a check for $60.
That's a decent.
Well, that would
first
be like $5
pleasure.
A month.
There you go.
I talked myself into it again. I think at the time, but I've obviously increased that amount over, over the years. I'll tell you what, I always feel good when I do it, and you will too. If you're waiting, as okay, I'll pledge tomorrow or I'll pledge. Don't wait till tomorrow, because this is your last chance to pledge your support for this show during the membership drive.
Don't delay. Join the community of people who come together to make great radio. There is no tomorrow for this winter pledge drive. This is it. And you're listening now. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Today's the last day of the drive. It ends at 6 o'clock tonight. But, of course, for this show, it ends in a couple of minutes here. Your financial support right now is more important than ever.
All right, 15 pledges to go. Your gift is a big part of what makes this program and all the programs you rely on possible on WPR. Take action right now. Make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
15 more pledges to go, and about 2 minutes to get those pledges. It's the last day of our drive. Please contribute now. If you haven't contributed, now's the time to do it at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Any amount really helps.
Thanks to Mary and Roger from Nina, who said, "We listen to Wisconsin Public Radio every day, no matter where we are. WPR can't be beat. It is worth every single penny of our pledge." Well, thank you very much, Mary and Roger. Here's a good one from Sean in Madison, who said that he recently, during the drive, heard Larry Mueller's delightful attempt at being a public defender. A chuckle is the quickest path to my wallet. Thanks, WPR. I really enjoyed that spot. I heard that spot too, Larry. That's was quite funny.
We have to go away now, but if you haven't contributed, now's the time to do it. Please go to WPR.org or phone 888 888- 202-2552, and thank you.